Time for the weekend panel, and this morning we're joined by Josie Pagani, a commentator on current and international affairs. Morena.
Morena.
And Chris Wikata, a director of the Wellington public relations firm BRG. Kia ora, Chris.
Morning.
A highlight or lowlight from the past week from each of you to start, please, Chris.
I think it's the people at the Games who have achieved better than we expected them to, or certainly I had, our swimmers. I have been frustrated for decades that we've had swim teams that have gone away and have not swum to their best. If you go to Commonwealth or Olympic Games or even World Champs, you have to swim PBs. You have to, and we've perennially underperformed, but no, not this time. It's been fantastic, particularly Lewis Clearbutt. I mean, he's a star for the future.
He is a star for the future.
I didn't even know we had someone in the men's trampoline until a couple of days ago.
I didn't even know trampolining was an Olympic sport.
Now we've got a medal. It's those ones. But
I literally
going,
jumped for joy when he won.
Achieving better than they had themselves expected to. And, of course, Emma Twigg. I mean, it's just fairy tale story.
And, of course, Emma Twigg, just before I get your great moment, there have been a lot of, Josie, a lot from the Games and quite a few, four from the rowing alone. Here's Emma Twigg.
It's going to be Emma Twigg here coming up to the line after those pair of fourth place finishes. The fabulous Fern from New Zealand wins the gold.
And more fabulous Ferns last night against France. Black Ferns captain Sarah Hiddeney at the post-match media conference.
Everything that people went through to win this, it's pretty crazy, and yeah, it's just something that you look at your teammates and like, we finally did it, we've done it for New Zealand.
I don't know if your highlight, Josie, is to do with the Olympics, but I'll get back to the Olympics. What have you noticed this past
week?
Oh
yes, I've got lots to say about the Black Ferns, just in love with them, complete girl crushes on all of them. But I suppose a low light, Jim. I've been watching what's been happening in Afghanistan as US troops have withdrawn, and of course New Zealand's withdrawn. Mm. And it's just tragic. I mean, Taliban now have control of over half the country, about 400 districts makes up the whole country, so they've got about half of them. And you just think, it's just, there are no good options here. I mean, we've been there for 20 years, and, you know, staying any longer isn't going to make much difference. But leaving, I mean, I just feel we're abandoning, in particular, those women who have been able to go back to work, girls have been able to go to school. It's just tragic. So I think we have to at least maintain humanitarian support, aid support. We should be bringing the translators and the Afghanis who worked with not just NZDF, New Zealand troops, but also New Zealand charities, bring them to New Zealand, because they are not safe as the Taliban moves up the country and across the country. And they've worked with New Zealanders and other countries for many years. So at least,
and their lack of safety has become abundantly clear, although a number have been moved out of the country already, haven't they? But no, it's a parlous situation. But did we ever think there was going to be any other outcome when Joe Biden announced the withdrawal?
No, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, there are no right or wrong options here. But I do think, you know, there's a principle, Jim, called responsibility to protect. And we've signed up to it. Countries across the world have signed up to it. It's to prevent something like Rwanda, where you had a genocide. And I think we still have a responsibility to that country, and as do the United States, the UK, and, you know, we need something like a Marshall Plan type approach, because otherwise that's how you ended up with Al-Qaeda in the first place, when the Soviet Union abandoned Afghanistan, Taliban moved in.
Josie and Chris on the panel. Thank you, Josie. Let's get back to the Olympics, because there's so much to talk about with you, not just the Olympics. But how have you both found them so far? The swimming, Chris has mentioned. Ratings in the US down because there are no crowds, reckons the Washington Post. Does that matter to both of you?
It's certainly odd. It brings a weirdness to it, trying to watch it. And there was a moment it was at half time in the women's sevens final yesterday, where there was the crowd announcer doing his scripted hype up the crowd, go Kiwis. And it was like, that's just odd. You'd have been better to leave that out, I think. It made it a bit strange.
It's like, you realise, though, don't you, how much noise the players make? Because you're thinking, oh, there is a lot of noise there. And it's actually all the players.
I wondered how it was going to affect particularly those team sport players, because I once spent the second half of a Kiwis England rugby league test at the Wellington Stadium, down behind the Kiwi bench, So down on the ground, and the noise at that pitch level was incredible.
Mm.
It was like it all focused into the ground and into the centre of the ground. So that being absent must have been odd for the players.
Gosh, though, weren't they amazing? I mean, the Black Ferns, and you compare it to some of the male teams, not that I want to make this a gender issue, but I mean, all the emotion, the love for the other teams, the
respect.
I mean, it was the respect. Gosh, they were amazing. There was none of that sort of, you know, slightly oppressed emotion of like, you know, well, you know, game of two halves and
the, but the stiff this, upper lip has gone from the men too at these
that's
Olympics.
That's true, but I mean, just a shout out to Ruby Tui, who's become a sort of internet sensation, who, you know, on a BBC or a Sky interview was asked, what did the captain say at half time when you were losing against Great Britain? And she said, well, have you ever been pukanad before? And you think the entire world is googling pukanad.
What's a pukanad?
What's a pukanad?
But then she said, it's the eyes. And, you know, I immediately thought, of, oh, you've had those eyes. Ooh.
COVID is getting worse in Tokyo. Does it strike you as a bit odd that the Olympic stadiums are empty, but seemingly closely packed together crowds throng to watch events like the road racing for the cyclists? And I know the competitors weren't mingling with those crowds, but I suppose you could argue that nor would they be in a stadium. I mean, you can see why the stadiums are empty, but is there an oddness about it as well?
Not really, because we know that if crowds outside are, you know, far less likely to be spreading COVID. So I think thronging outside watching the cycling is different to being stuck in a stadium all crowded together. I mean, yeah, I mean, we just seen today in Tokyo, you know, the state of emergency this week's been extended. COVID cases are on the rise. I think there's only about 224 cases that are related to the Olympics. And mostly that's, I think, over half are local Japanese staff or contractors. It does feel like the athletes have been slightly cocooned and everybody else is probably more at risk if you're a contractor or working in the Games.
All right, one more Olympics question before we move on to other things. Laurel Hubbard competes in the 87 plus kg weightlifting tomorrow, and the worldwide reaction, actually it's already recommenced, and one chat site in China has had 170 million comments about Laurel, with most sympathetic to her but unsure as well whether a formerly male athlete with more testosterone and inherited muscle development should be lifting alongside cisgender women. So just briefly, what do both of you say?
Go, Chris.
Support Laurel's position and personal decisions 100%. I do have a lingering concern about what advantage remains from before transition. And, you know, our sports doctor and former All Black doctor, Olympic doctor Dave Girard, has expressed that. And I sort of lean towards that. It's not about her decision and what she has done to me. It's about, is there an unfairness or an advantage against the people that she then competes against?
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, let's put this in perspective. There isn't some massive epidemic of transgender sports people playing in women's sports, so it's not like it's a huge problem for women's sports. And the bigger issue is transgender girls in schools not actually playing in sports and not feeling like they can. So there's a much bigger issue around all of this. But I do think, you know, you're right, Chris, that we need to take this out of the culture wars and look at it scientifically. Is there an unfair advantage if you have gone through puberty? And that's a legitimate debate to have. Lay people find out. I don't know the answer to that because I'm not a scientist, but I think that's a legitimate debate without being accused of being transphobic. And you have to look at a statistic I read this morning where, you know, no woman in international professional sports has come within 10% of the best 1,000 males. So there is a difference here in terms of performance, and so you have to weigh that up. Is testosterone the best measure of that? I don't know. So let's take it out of the culture wars, put it into the scientific sphere, and be guided by that.
All right, another hard question, 10 minutes to 9. The UN employee in Fiji with COVID turned down for treatment in New Zealand, but then a change of heart. The logistics of getting her here were considerable. Of course, everyone hopes she can recover. There's been a hospital worker isolated now because of what's being referred to as a PPE protocol incident in connection with the management of this case. Dr. Colin Tukuitonga, Auckland University's Associate Professor of Public Health, says bringing her here was a bad call.
I think it's a dreadful decision for a number of reasons. One is it puts us at unnecessary risk. We are, in a sense, playing with fire.
So, was it right to make an exception in this case? She is with the United Nations in Fiji, and we're told the United Nations will regard this very appreciatively. Josie, what do you think?
Well, I mean, the first thing is this isn't taking the place of a local Fijian person. I mean, she's actually Fijian herself. Because, as you say, Jim, we signed up to a protocol that when you work for the UN or you work for an international organisation, you go to dangerous places. And part of the quid pro quo of that is that you will be lifted out if there's a, if you're in danger. And so Medevac will pay the full costs of this to, for New Zealand. So Helen Clark's right. You know, this is something that we signed up to and we have an obligation and duty to do, and the costs will be covered. The bigger issue is what are we doing in Fiji? And you know, yes, we've increased funding, I think, by 10 million. But, you know, we've got companies in New Zealand. Fisher & Paykel is one, healthcare. SouthMed in Dunedin have created these amazing respirators that don't need oxygen tanks. Let's just get them to Fiji. That will save lives before you get into the ICU.
But
so there's a lot we can do to help Fiji.
Yeah, but the other thing that Colin Tonga was talking about was the danger to New Zealand. Chris, what's your view?
This is a political issue, not a medical issue. In my view, and I mean, the logistics are there. We are retrieving people out of the islands quite regularly. It happens. We have the infrastructure set up to do that with our ambulance and our health services. It's been happening for a long, long time. Obviously, extra protocols around safety because of COVID. If this is part of us being a global citizen, then perhaps that needed to be better explained. I think the explanation for it is lacking, and I think that's what's causing me concern.
I think, Jim, can I just say, I think the real issue this week was just the mess that came out of, in terms of messaging from the Ministry of Health. So, first of all, it was, oh, ICU doesn't have the capacity to take one person with COVID. And you're thinking, yeah, I hope to God that's not true and that's a lie, because otherwise we're all in trouble if COVID and Delta comes here. So I think the idea that there's a risk to New Zealand, I don't buy it. I think we're set up to deal with COVID. We should be after all this time. So we should be able to deal with one COVID patient in Middlemore Hospital.
Okay. No action to be taken against Gloria Vale by the Labor Inspectorate as workers are deemed volunteers. Much hue and cry.
How did they volunteer?
Well, they volunteered by dint of being born into the
yes
life.
Oh, like, yeah, my son volunteered when I told him to make his bed and do the gardening.
Okay, but the right...
Voluntold.
The right decision anyway, yes or no?
Sounds like it's a decision that was made because the legislation doesn't allow them to make a different decision.
Yes.
I mean, there are other bits of legislation. This is under the Employment Relations Act, where they're going, you're not an employee, and that's true. It, by letter of the law, as you just said, Chris, I mean, it's like, you know, you're a family or a tribe looking after your own, ploughing your own fields. You're not an employee. So maybe a better act would have been the Health and Safety at Work Act, where, because I know we work in aid charities, you don't make a distinction in terms of that act compared to employees or volunteers. If you're a volunteer for, you know, Save the Children or World Vision or whatever, you have the same rights under the Health and Safety Act as you do if you're an employee. So I wonder if that's actually the act that they should be using. They've been misused, they're working long hours, they're there against their will, they're being mistreated.
It's hard on people also who decide to leave Gloria Vale with no money and perhaps few employable skills, and it does sound like they worked hard inside. But is there an issue with the issue around whether an insistence on workplace health becomes an attack on religious belief, Josie?
Ah, yeah, so I wondered about that too, because, you know, if the hate speech came in as it is now, would it actually be problematic to criticise Gloria Vale or Scientology? You know, would they be able to take you to court for hate speech? That's not clear, and that's a legitimate question. That's not a cute question. That's actually a legitimate one. If you start criticising a religion, could you be accused of hate speech?
AMP is running a big ad campaign which proclaims its disapproval of the fossil fuel industry as an investment option, oil and gas, thermal coal mining. But only last year its Australian chief executive was defending the right of major financial institutions to maintain these investments, saying he would rather engage from within rather than divest. And the All Blacks have decided on engagement. They'll have the petrochemical conglomerate INEOS on their shirts. Is that fine, Chris, or is it not?
Oh, this one really vexed me because my initial reaction was, oh, let's not mix politics with sports. And then I thought, hang on, I've just been reading about 40 years since the Springbok tour where we asked the All Blacks to be political and then later with the Cavaliers tour as well. And I went, oh, hang on a minute, back up the bus, son. You need to think about this a little harder. I think everybody now agrees with the principle of what Greenpeace is saying. That is the path we have to move down. But it's the speed by which we do it, and because you can't just turn the country off tomorrow. I mean, even if you did, we would have no impact on global emissions whatsoever. We're too small. That's not to say we shouldn't take a moral high ground, we shouldn't be moving towards it and doing good things. But look at what INEOS does. Some of their stuff is about hospital-grade hand sanitizers and medical stuff. They're involved in recycling for dairy packaging. How wouldn't that be good for New Zealand when it's one of our biggest companies? So it's a little more complex than just saying, those guys are bad, you should have gone with some good guys.
And I think that's the problem is when you look at this through the moral lens, it gets really complicated. And you start going, you know, okay, ban INEOS. Well, and as Chris says, we're still using oil and gas and we're going to need to for a while longer. That doesn't mean we're not all on side with transitioning off it. But then you start thinking, well, okay, so if you're going to ban INEOS, what about banning Air New Zealand, which is the biggest user of carbon in New Zealand? What about banning Fonterra, who also have to use coal-fired processes? And then you start thinking, well, what about companies that are using in their supply chain modern slavery, which is a huge issue? Why would you not ban them? And and so the list goes on, and you kind of think, well, there's a at some point you've got to say, are oil and gas companies who exist now the bad guys in this? I'm not sure that they're the worst bad guys out there. You know, they are actually, they know they've got a transition, and we're still using oil and gas, and we know we're all working out what's going to take the place of oil and gas. We haven't got there yet.
Yeah, and a good example of this is hydrogen. I've been a fan of moving towards hydrogen since 1992, when I read an article about Japan was looking at doing a model village that was powered by fuel cells with hydrogen, and the technology just hasn't quite got there yet. And companies like Japan pour billions and billions into this research because they have been, you know, energy deficient for a long, long time. So we're not quite there yet. We're very close on hydrogen, but it's just not quite there yet.
And why wouldn't we ban Google and Facebook, who aren't paying tax, who are contributing to mass increases in inequality across the world? There's a lot of potential bad guys out there you could ban. I just think this is more complicated, and it smacks of hypocrisy if you ban one company and ignore all that.
As that list that you mentioned goes on, and you kept mentioning examples, I can see international trade and commerce rapidly vanishing, JC,
in
the short term.
That's right, and that's why I think our moral lens needs to be driven a little bit more by evidence and an understanding of what the key issues are right now.
Lovely to talk to you, both of you. Thank you so much for your time. Chris Wickhider, Josie Pagani on the Weekend Panel.